Hi there, I'm Alex Bennett and today we're going to talk about the Solo Transatlantic Ocean Race. For the 2008 event, I was one of the competitors that signed up for this unique sporting challenge. The course takes solo sailors across the fearsome North Atlantic Ocean against the prevailing winds and currents to Marblehead in America, 3,000 nautical miles. The race itself is known as the grandfather of all modern-day solo ocean races. Originally conceived as a half-crown bet between cockleshell hero Blondie Hasler and legendary round-the-world yachtsman Sir Francis Chichester way back in 1960. It's arguably one of the three toughest and most dangerous solo ocean races in existence. Ever since I was a young child, I've dreamed of adventure on the ocean. I'm an ocean racer, and solo ocean racing is in my blood. It's what really captivates me and captures my attention. But many people ask me, why? Why would I want that kind of lifestyle which embraces such extreme risk and discomfort by sailing across oceans on my own? After all, solo ocean racing is an extreme sport and frankly highly dangerous. The short answer is simple. It's because the challenge is there. However, in reality, the full answer is perhaps a little more in-depth, complex. For me, to have the opportunity to compete at top level, sailing against some of the very best yachtsmen and women in the world, and being a competitor within the nucleus of a solo ocean race, that's an opportunity hard to beat. The physical aspect of taking a high-octane racing yacht solo across an ocean, for me, represents a pinnacle challenge. I can tell you, it takes a different mindset to the norm to sail across an ocean on your own, there's no doubt about that. But to combine that prospect within a highly competitive sporting environment, you need an extraordinary set of skills to take on such a huge challenge. Above all, your mindset needs to be robust, with a clear and defined approach to the task in hand. Without what I call a titanium mindset and a clear plan, the solo sailor can be vulnerable to the power and determination of Mother Nature. In 2008, I found myself standing on the dockside in Plymouth, looking down at a superb racing machine, moored up amongst a whole fleet of similar impressive yachts. The boat I was looking at was sleek and state-of-the-art. This machine had been purpose-built with one goal in mind, to take its solo skipper across the vast expanse of the Atlantic Ocean at high speed. The boat was painted in a striking colour, bright green representing the sponsor's corporate livery, with prominent logos displayed across the decks and the hull. It was unmistakably a corporate sponsor's advertising heaven. A 40-foot long billboard conveying a corporate message to the world. The boat was called Fujifilm, and she looked fantastic. It was the vision of one man's dream which had now become a reality. That man and skipper of the boat was me. Of course, it's worthy to note that the project had been conceived years before this very day. But as I looked down at this supreme yacht, I felt a huge sense of pride at what had already been achieved. Thousands of man hours had been injected into the build of this boat. I knew my team and I had already succeeded where so many other worthy campaigns had failed. Somehow, we had managed to drag our project from the threshold of dreams into the world of reality. We had negotiated all of the seemingly insurmountable hurdles which had presented themselves throughout the evolution of the build of the boat. So many campaigns like ours fail before reaching the start line. It's just a sad fact of life in the commercial world of sport. Failure often presents itself in many forms, but most often, at the top of the list, it's usually about the money. In the UK, attracting sponsorship for solo ocean racing has always been an uphill struggle. Traditionally, it hasn't enjoyed the same television coverage as, say, football or motor racing. It's a different story, though, across the channel in France. French solo sailors are given the same status as many Premiership footballers. They're legends, rock stars, and frankly, they should be. Their names are known throughout the land and beyond. In France, it's not uncommon to see tens of thousands of people line the harbourside to watch their heroes set sail on a solo high seas adventure. In France, the sport of solo sailing is fully commercialised and big business. As such, the sponsorship opportunities are more apparent, and where the money flows, the competition grows. Despite the Artemis Transat being a solo race, my project, like other sailing campaigns, was made a reality not just by one man, but by a whole number of individuals who had come together to form a cohesive team. Everyone involved in the project, from our sponsors right down to the volunteers who had graciously given their free time to help out, they had all played their part to make this project a success. So let me ask you, what's it really like to sail across the mighty North Atlantic on your own against the prevailing winds and currents, competing against some of the very best solo sailors on the planet? This is the story of the 2008 Artemis Solo Transatlantic Race.
The Artemis Transat, one of the three toughest solo ocean races. It's 3,000 miles across the North Atlantic, on your own, from Plymouth to Boston, and one of the toughest challenges I've ever faced.
Well, the atmosphere down here in the race village has been nothing less than superb. We've had a jazz band, a blues band. It's been fantastic. There's been thousands of people walking through the village over the last 4 days, and obviously that's helped to create a real buzz, a real atmosphere in the air, and certainly the weather has helped as well. So right now it's the place to be down here in Plymouth at Sutton Harbour, and we're all looking forward to the start of the race. We've spent the last 6 months preparing Fujifilm for a very hard and enduring race like the Artemis Transat, and having done a lot of training on the boat, I'm very pleased with her performance. We've got everything in the mix to pull off a result, and we're certainly expecting great things.
Treacherous Atlantic lay ahead. I knew it would be a challenge, but I had no idea just how tough this race would become. Everyone expected rough sailing, but actually, first of all, we were powering through thick fog and light winds.
Well, here we are on board Fuji. It's about 9:30 in the morning of day three, Tuesday, and we've got a yacht about a mile up on our windward quarter. Looks like group partouche, another 40. We're both going neck and neck, taking it to them. Masthead shoots on, big breeze, fast sailing, 13 to 17 knots of boat speed. It's all on. Just what the doctor ordered. It's important we eat a lot of food during the race, get good quality meals, and this little turbo cooker does just the job.
But actually, in a race like this, there's no let up, and soon I had a problem.
Well, just had a Monty with this masthead spinnaker. Went to hoist it and it got ripped on the way up, so I've spent the last 45 minutes on the foredeck with some spray glue and some repair tape, just doing a bit of an ad hoc fix. Just getting dark as well, so I couldn't really see what I was doing, but it's got to be done. Anyway, the sail's back up and drawing again, but lost a few minutes, that's for sure. Well, here we are in the middle of the Atlantic, and Fuji and I are holding up pretty good. We're about sixth place at the moment and looking to improve on that over the next few days. The weather's been quite light, and I think the next few days the wind is going to stay light as well, and it's going to be very tactical. So we've got to make sure we make the right decisions as to whereabouts on the racetrack we go. But as things stand right now, we're looking good.
The fleet was slowly losing the wind. Keeping the boat moving now was essential.
Right in front of us there, or coming down our starboard side, is a competitor. I've been chasing them all day. This morning they were a tiny speck on the horizon, and now we've managed to reel them in, and I think they're stuck in a windless zone on our starboard side, because we've sailed straight down the side of them. But we're finally level. I think it's Miranda on 40 degrees, but I'm not sure.
But those light conditions didn't last long as we headed towards the ice gate. The gate's a set of coordinates introduced to keep the fleet away from the iceberg danger zone in the north.
Fujifilm from the mid-Atlantic. We're 9 days into this race, and it's all to play for, I can tell you that. The whole fleet is glued together so closely that it's anybody's race, even at this stage of the game.
All the fleets coming down from the north now on this northwesterly wind, they've all cracked off. We're all starting to do the high single digits, 8.5, 9 knots, and Soldini's out in front. The conditions were relentless. And they took their toll.
Just had to get the Co-Zero down as the wind's filled in now. It's day 10. We're about 440 miles from the ice gate. The good news though is boat speed is back up to 8 knots, about what it should be. And bad news is I am beyond exhausted. I'm going to have to try and get my head down now for a few hours or an hour. Just to recoup a bit, you know. Definitely in the danger zone for exhaustion with me. The wind has been clocking round. Northwest, west, west-southwest, south-east, south. As we've been tacking through, or as the various frontal passages have been coming through, every couple of hours. And a minute ago I got called out with the Co-Zero up, sailing along at 8 knots. All of a sudden, bang, the whole boat gets tacked. Everything's on its side. Oh, it's taken me 2 hours to sort it out. Soaking wet, not through spray, but through sweat. But we keep going. God, I'm exhausted.
And the worst was yet to come.
Well, disaster is the only way to describe it. About half an hour ago, sailing along in about 13 knots of wind into the wind and waves, dropped off a wave and loud bang, and the halyard that attaches the Genoa to the top of the mast has ripped off the Harken furler, just pulled the metal right out. So the sail ended up in the sea. I had a bit of a titanic struggle to get the sail back on board, but managed to do it. And now the sail's stowed down below, but we've got a big problem in the fact that we've lost the ability to use our head sail.
It was a serious problem. Normally, to fix it, you go up the mast. But in those rough seas, that wasn't an option.
I managed to tackle the problem we've got with the furler on the Genoa. The pin ripped off the top of the furler. I've managed to lash it all up with some English braids, Vectran lashing, and rehoist the sail, and the sail is now in a working order or working state. How long for, I don't know, but hopefully it will last us to the finish. But we've rounded the ice gate. We're sailing along in about 30 knots of breeze. Just been told that Apart City, ahead of us by 40 miles, has got structural problems. Miranda's been sent to get him. I think he's going to abandon. We're all on standby just in case they need more boats. Oh, this race is a cruel one. Whoa. I just hope we can hold it together to the finish. Poor Fuji's really taken a pounding, especially beating out to the ice gate. I didn't know a boat could take that much punishment without breaking.
Others weren't so lucky. Apart City's race was over, but the boat held together and Ivan headed for the nearest safe haven. It meant Miranda could keep her focus on racing and our ongoing duel.
At the moment, the sister ship to this boat, 40 degrees, sailed by Miranda Merrin, the boat that we've been dueling with from the start, she's 50 miles behind. Which is a relief for me, because we have been neck and neck across the Atlantic for the last 20 days.
For me and Fuji, the finish line was now in sight. Crossing the finish line was such an unbelievable feeling. It was a huge achievement, not just for me, but for the whole team.
Yeah, we'll pull it up with this lady jack to the tip.
To be the first Brit here is marvellous, frankly. It was really tough, and it could have gone either way with either myself or Miranda on 40 degrees. We both got identical boats, so Fujifilm and 40 degrees are out of the same moulds, they're identical. So they go about the same sort of speed, and we really have been stuck to each other like glue for the whole of the race. And it was only about 4 days ago that I saw a tactical opportunity and took it, dived south, and she stayed in the north, and it paid off for me.
Wow, that brings back some great memories. Completing that race, for me, was certainly a milestone moment in my life. Such a rare and unique experience. Today, the Solo Transatlantic Race represents a must-do life event for any serious pro solo sailor. It really is an Ironman race, that's for sure. The road towards any event of that magnitude is always a long one. It doesn't matter whether it's a sailboat race, or an epic adventure like the Paris-Dakar, or the London Marathon, or even a long-distance bicycle race. The fact is, we all have achievement within us. The way I see life, you have to go out there and make it happen. For me, I choose the stage of ocean racing to play out my adventures. I'm looking forward to sharing more of my stories of adventure on the high seas, so be sure to tune in for the next episode. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast and want to know more, click on the follow button to keep up to date with my future listings. Or you can go to my website, alexbennett.co.uk, where you can get your own copy of my book, High Seas, High Stakes. The book details the highs and lows of my life as a professional sailor, two mid-Atlantic rescues, and how I managed to win the biggest double-handed ocean race in the world, only to sink on the way back to the UK. For some great video footage of my sailing adventures, search YouTube, Bennett Ocean Racing. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you again soon.